Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, you can visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, all of the shows are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about a happy group dynamic. You know, a lot of times we talk about the group dynamic and how it makes a difference to the outcome and how, well, and how fast the process goes, really, more than anything else, and whether or not we ultimately reach a successful negotiated outcome. Yeah. So that would be a happy group dynamic, right? So what is it? What is a happy group dynamic within our context? Within the context of a seminar, a workshop, a mediation, a third-party negotiation, alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we are, well, we're usually the leader of. We're usually the third-party impartial. What is a happy group dynamic within that context? And I see we have lots of participation. Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. Tam and a lot of others are saying that it's a happy group dynamic when the participants feel satisfied with the process. Yes, they feel satisfied with the process, and they are willing to commit to it, right? Yeah. We've got lots of different definitions. You know what? I think we're going to go through what the definitions are first, what is a happy group dynamic within our context, and then we're going to go back and do them one by one and talk about how to achieve that, because this show is not theoretical. I mean, I like theoretical ideas, but we're practical people, and we want to know how to really accomplish this, how to create a happy group dynamic. So, as Tam and others are saying, that participants can feel satisfied with the process. Yeah. So let's do the definitions first, and then let's go back and let's talk about how to achieve them. So I think the second one, Caroline and others are saying, a happy group dynamic is when everyone feels that they are being treated fairly and equally. When everyone feels that they are being treated fairly and equally. There's no second rate here. We're all going to be treated fairly and equally. Yavas and others are saying it's a happy group dynamic within our context when the participants are satisfied with the leadership. Ooh, that would be us. Satisfaction with the leader, that we're all going in the right direction, that the leader knows something. Yes, yeah, satisfaction with the leadership. Quite a few people, Christy and others, are saying that you have a happy group dynamic when it's a pleasant to attend, so you want to participate. The group is interesting and it's pleasant. It's a lot of people are calling that a convivial atmosphere, and we often call it that ourselves, don't we? That it's, you kind of look forward to it, that you're satisfied with the process and everyone's being treated fairly and equally, and you're satisfied with the leadership as a participant, and well, you're rather looking forward to your time together and to thinking about it and to helping and to trying to reach a successful outcome. It's something you rather enjoy, that you like. And that's a happy group dynamic, isn't it? Everybody feels that they're really getting someplace. So let's take these wonderful definitions that we've got kind of a general concept of, and let's refine them. Let's do as we often do, and let's take the definition, which is an idea, and make it a practical. What is it that we do? So let's take the first one. And, this is interesting. Gabriel and others are saying there's one more. Mm-hmm. And it's working together harmoniously toward the common outcome. I can deal with that. Working together harmoniously towards the common outcome. We're getting along all right. And we're working together towards the common goal, the common outcome. And, you know, we sometimes discuss this. It's not, by the way, all of the shows are archived, recipeforpeacenow.com. Sometimes the outcome, what we want to happen, is the same, but we want it for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So we have to work out a way to work together, because we have very different reasons for wanting the same ultimate outcome. Well, we want to work towards that, and we need to harmoniously work together, or we won't get very far. Yeah, so good point. So let's start with the first one. Let's kind of think about this. The first one was participants feel satisfied with the process, right? Participants feel satisfied. They feel that they're getting somewhere. So how do we get that? How do we get the participants to feel that way? Mm-hmm. As a practical manner. Uh-huh. Mikayla and others are saying, and quite a few people are using the word transparency. Yeah, the process needs to have transparency. Now, what does that mean, really? Yeah, it's kind of an Americanism, isn't it, to use transparency in that way? And, of course, this is a global show. But it means that we don't keep secrets. The leader doesn't keep things from the participants just because it'll make the leader's life easier. I mean, let's face it, that's why we would do it. But the process needs transparency. Tell everyone how it's going. Tell the participants if we've gotten bogged down. Maybe they can help. Yeah, maybe they can get together and find a solution. If we've gone a little bit, well, the process has gone a little sideways. Yeah, that's part of transparency, too. It's not only just the good stuff, so to speak. It's everything. We want to know whenever something is happening, whenever something needs to be talked about. Transparency in the process will make everyone feel satisfied with it, even if it's going a little slow. You know, sometimes it does. Sometimes it goes a little slow, or it gets a little bit bogged down, or goes a little sideways. We have to talk about that. Let's have transparency. Let's know everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damien and others are using a word which we use quite a bit here, and I'm always cautious with, but I know a lot of you like it. And thank you for all of your participation and for all of your ideas. This is wonderful. That timeline. Mm-hmm. So that we could see how the process is doing. Now, I am fond of a timeline, as long as it's not too rigid, right? Yeah. We're getting some agreement because it's hard to know at the start exactly how you're going to finish and when. It'd be kind of unusual unless, yes, thank you very much, a lot of people are saying that quite frequently, there's an external, well, people are calling it a drop-dead date, which is kind of an Americanism, but there's an external date by which you must finish the process. Mm-hmm. It has to get on the ballot by a certain date. Have to turn something in to a governmental or business entity by a certain date. The seminar must end by a certain date. You see, there's an actual timeline that has an end. And so, but it's kind of a process that we're talking about. The timeline probably isn't of an end in that way. And therefore, you have to be a little bit careful about being too rigid about it. But yes, a timeline will show us where we've been, right, and where we're headed very clearly. Because it is human nature to think we're not getting anywhere, right, if it's taking a while. Because no one remembers how low down we were when we started. And that's the key. We really didn't have anything when we started. We were very far away. And now, look how far we've, that's a real good use for timeline, right? And to set deadlines, good point. If you've got deadlines that need to be met, a timeline is a very valuable visual. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just be careful about being too rigid about a timeline. People are satisfied with the process. Quite a few of you, Angel and others, are using the civility rules. Yes, that people are being, well, that goes to fairly and treated fairly and equally also, which we get into. It's kind of like, oh, we're going to lapse into that. Fantabulous. The civility rules go both ways, and I see that a lot of people are heading towards the second one too. And the civility rules are very simple. You can make them as complex as you want, but they basically say, we're all going to treat each other with respect. And if it's your turn to speak or present, no one else is going to butt in on it. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Now, you can make them more formal if you need to. But I find that those rules just, your basic, we're going to treat each other with respect and we're going to take turns properly, is my real baseline civility rules. Mm-hmm. And they're very important to establish at the beginning, right? Yeah. So that we can all be satisfied with the process. And the second one, everyone feels they are being treated fairly and equally. That goes to the civility rules too, doesn't it? Fairly and equally. Yeah. No second-class participants here. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to have everyone feel and make a happy group dynamic? Because they're being treated fairly and equally. Mm-hmm. Ijiro, is that right? Yeah, Ijiro. And others are saying that one of the ways to treat people fairly and equally is to have timed turns to speak and present. Timed turns to speak and present. We take turns, and that's towards the civility rules, right? No one's going to butt into our time because it's not permitted. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets their chance. Timed turns to speak and present. Now, we've talked about this a wee bit before, and thank you all for being here, and thank you for listening, and also if you want to hear prior shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But I am quite in favor, and I know a lot of you have different kinds of ways of doing this. I think it's important that people know that they are indeed being treated equally and fairly by having a visual on the timed turns to speak and present. Now, what does that mean? Well, somebody has to keep the time, right? And if you do a, say everybody has 2 minutes, and we're going around the room, which is how we are taking our turns. And everybody's got 2 minutes to give an opinion, ask a question, present a finding. Maybe we need more time than that. But say it's a set amount of time. It is everyone's impression, me included, that when you get up to speak, when we talk, it seems like the time flies and that we didn't really have the allotted amount, the 2 minutes, because we got shortchanged. And everybody else has a long 2 minutes. They're getting more than 2 minutes, right? Right. This leads to an unhappy group dynamic. So what are we going to do about it? I like to time it, I don't like being responsible for timing it because then people think that perhaps I am on someone else's side. So I personally, if we need to do such a thing as to actually take formal timed turns, yeah, I personally use a visual that is non-human, not capable of human tampering, right? I don't like to use my own watch, the little clocky thing on my smartphone, you know, nothing like that. I like to use an actual kitchen timer or something visual like that that you set and you can see how much time you have left for the presentation and you can see that everyone has been treated exactly equally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a timed turn. Mm-hmm. I like the visual of it. And also, yes, it's a good point, and thank you for making it, that when you can see it, you can kind of tailor your presentation because you know when you're running out of time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Time turns. Lonnie and others are saying that everyone feels that they're being treated fairly and equally when there's a democracy, when all views are considered. A democracy where all views are considered. Yes, absolutely. The actual technicalities of a democracy, and I know this is probably being used in a more broad way, tend to be a little, well, substantially, I guess, influenced by the type of group you're dealing with. If you have to vote on every single thing, and it's exhausted to the nth degree, you're not going to go fast. Now, maybe people will be satisfied with that process because they'll feel that every single thing was considered and fairly and equally. That might be fine if the process needs to take a while. But it will take a while if you've got that going. Mm-hmm. Democracy. Where all views are considered. Yes, everything should be considered, and perhaps like in a democracy voted upon, if they're very close, so that we can decide what our course of action is going to be. And that's very important. What's our course of action? What are we doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Charles and others are saying that you are to be, participants feel they're being treated fairly and equally, that you need to use a step-by-step so that you can see the fairness, mm-hmm. that you could really see what's going on and why we're doing something is the step-by-step within the process, and that's always important. Why are we doing it that way? Let's all consider it, you see, step by step. And so that we can see the fairness. We can see that everyone was treated equally because it's working out that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the third one that we talked about, a way to create a happy group dynamic? It is satisfaction with the leadership. Yeah. How satisfied are the participants? With us, with the leader, with the person who is organizing the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Satisfaction with the leadership. Tanisha and others are saying that if the participants have confidence in the abilities of the leader, if the leader has confidence in their abilities, then the participants will have confidence. It goes both ways. If the leader has confidence in his or her abilities, then the participants will have confidence. Yeah, because they'll see that you know what you're doing. Yeah. They'll see that you're sure that we're going to reach the desired outcome, the desired goal. And if you're sure as the leader, makes us feel more sure as the participant, doesn't it? Because you've been chosen as leader because of your special skills, probably. Yeah. So it makes everyone feel better. If they have confidence in your abilities, then the participants will have confidence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. James and others are saying that the main thing to have that creates satisfaction with leadership is consistent rules. Consistent rules. I haven't actually thought about it in that way, but yeah, we've got consistent rules, don't we? We've got rules about how to behave and rules about how we're going to make a decision, right? Mm-hmm. And whether or not it's really going to be a democracy or the leader's going to really kind of lead it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, consistent rules. Mm-hmm. You know, Rosemira and others are doing one of my favorite things, because you know that I truly believe this is a recipe for peace now, that you should lead by good example. Mm-hmm. Satisfaction with the leadership? The leadership leads by good example. Yeah. And that's why it is so important as the leader to lead by good example, to not really... All right, to not breach the civility rules, yes. Lead by good example. If you say you're going to do something, it gets done. Mm-hmm. If you say everybody can ask for help, you can ask for help, right? Yeah, lead by good example. Mm-hmm. That would also be the consistency of the rules, too. Not one day this is really, you know, not good, and then the next day, oh, it's wonderful. No, you have to have consistency. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lead by good example. I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That goes to truly to civility and to fairness. Mm-hmm. Civility and fairness. Mm-hmm. So what else should we do? In order to make the group dynamic a happy one, and everyone feels being treated fairly and equally. Mm-hmm. So lead by good example. Lead by good example is one of my favorite, because you know the old expression, do as I say, not as I do. Not a good expression, right? It's kind of a criticism, and it's rightfully one, that you haven't led by good example. Mm-hmm. You can't make people do stuff if they don't have trust in you, and also if they see you're not doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Fazah says that the most important leadership trait is to listen. Mm-hmm. The most important leadership trait is to listen. Yeah, to really consider everything. Equal and fair and successful leadership, too. Mm-hmm. To listen, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, so we move on to the next one? I think so. The next one I'm going to group together, there's two of them that are very similar. Mm-hmm. And that is to make a pleasant environment to attend and a convivial atmosphere. Yeah, a pleasant environment that people want to come and a convivial atmosphere, which will make a more pleasant environment. Mm-hmm. So what should we do to make that truth, to make that a practical act, to really make it so? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pleasant to attend with a convivial atmosphere. People like coming. They would like to come again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nyan and others are saying that in order to make it pleasant to attend, that you have to make the location time convenient. Yeah, time convenient. Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise it's hard to attend and you feel frustrated. Mm-hmm. Ah, gee, they never hold the meeting any place where I can go. Mm-hmm. Or they Skype at a time that I can't be there. Yeah, so make the location and time convenient and also convivial and pleasant, yeah. So make the location and times convenient. Mm-hmm. And don't do too big of a survey either. It really, people are saying to take a survey. Yes, for location and time. Easy enough to do on all those little free apps, or you can just send an email. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. Yeah. So, what else can we do to make it more pleasant? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very good point Barbara and others are making. You can greet everyone as they come in the door. That's very affirming that you want them there. Yeah, greet everyone. You know, it's one of those things I say costs nothing but has big returns. Tell everyone how glad you are that they've come. They're donating something, their time, right? Yeah. And if they're getting paid, they're donating their expertise. Maybe volunteers do too, but even more so if they're getting paid. So greet everyone and make them feel important. Mm-hmm. Peter and others are saying also to introduce everyone. Mm-hmm. I am a big believer in name tags. I know. And we're getting a lot of dissent already. You're either a name tag wearer or you're not a name tag wearer. And I'm afraid that I am of the yes, I would be delighted, because quite frankly, my memory for names is not that good. So you need to greet everyone and make them feel welcome. Yeah, greet everyone. Mm-hmm. Which goes with introduce everyone. Peter and others are saying not only to greet, but to introduce around. A lot of times if we haven't seen each other in a little while, or I've got a new participant or two, we'll actually go around the table and introduce ourselves and say just like one sentence about what we do or something else that's interesting to the group, because you might know the people. Yeah. So introduce everyone. I like a name tag. Getting back to name tags, I really do. It's because I like to read them. But so don't tell anyone. The whole world knows. But I think it is a convenience to have a name tag. Mm-hmm. And then the introductions are a little less formal, and then you can remember people a little better, right? Yeah. So introduce, greet everyone, and introduce everyone to make it a more pleasant and convivial atmosphere. Now I've got a group of wonderful ideas about how to make it pleasant to attend, and I'm going to call them physically comfortable. Because it is important that you become that you're physically comfortable, or else you're not going to want to come again. Quite a few people have said accessible, handicapped accessible, maybe even car accessible, depending on what you've got. Sometimes steps really will throw like an exhibitor off and stuff. So you need to be cognizant. You need to be polite about it, about to be able to get a physically comfortable location and accessible. Enough chairs, right? Everybody gets their own to sit down on. Equal ones, too, by the way. Temperature is being mentioned quite a bit. Thank you all for your participation, by the way. Temperature. And the food needs to be plentiful. Yes, that's one of our little... All right, it's my little fetish. I don't like to run out of food, and I never deny anyone seconds and thirds and fourths and like that. So I always bring extra. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. Okay, so those are physical issues that might make someone more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's look at this working together harmoniously one. Yeah, we're going through a little bit fast. People are going, you're going to get to the recipes tonight? I have a tendency not to because we have lots of discussion. But I'm kind of going to try to do it tonight, this time, because it's, you know, the same ones are appearing a lot. And I know I get emails, and people really do look forward to the recipe part. So, the last one that we talked about is working together harmoniously for a common goal. Well, how are we going to get people to do that? Work together harmoniously for a common goal. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of you are saying create teams. Yes, that's a very good point. If your group is large enough so they can report back to the whole, and then they get together and are more likely to work together harmoniously, right? Because it's a smaller group and maybe a chosen one for various skills. Mm-hmm. Work together harmoniously. You know, this is an interesting point that Hussein is making. We don't do it all that often, and probably we should, that you can have field trips to see the issues with your own eyes. If that's practical, depends what you're doing, of course, and the expense. But a field trip's kind of nice, right? Go out and see what it is we're talking about. Maybe that's something you send a team to. Good point. Yeah, team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, field trips. Yes, and this is going to make a lovely segue into the recipe portion of the show. And yes, this time I think we are going to make it. We get so involved in our discussions that we go for weeks without actually doing the recipes, and they keep reappearing, I know. Nazir and others are saying that one of the ways to make harmony is to have networking and the timeouts with the food. And that's a very good point. Recipe for Peace Now really does advocate having like a potluck, having some food in the room and some non-alcoholic and maybe even a glass of wine, never hurt anybody. But we really advocate acting harmoniously, and one of the ways to do that is to have some food, to break bread together, so to speak, so that the food is really a tool. That's what I usually say. It may be because we're hungry. I mean, we might be hungry. It might be dinner time. But it's really meant as a tool. And the reason being is that sometimes things start to kind of get, we're almost breaching the civility rules, right? Are we really, we're tired. We've been working on it for a really long time, and everybody's kind of sagging and going, oh my God, the process is so long and I'm so hungry. You know, that kind of stuff. So the time outs to go get a little bit from the potluck and to think about it and like that are wonderful harmonious living ideas because, and I like, you know, I use the word networking but it's overused, but it's really a way for the leader to diffuse a situation and say, you know, it's time. I can smell the stew smells delicious. Let's all, and it keeps everyone in the room, because the stew does smell delicious, and everybody wants to eat it and have something to drink and like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So harmoniously getting together is helped when we get to have some time together outside of the formal. And that's the idea of the food being a tool to get us talking to each other, to get us thinking about each other in a more friendly light, especially if the people are quite diverse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's true. Yeah, people are saying it's not always a tool. Truth. Sometimes the group is very single-minded, right? The people really aren't very diverse in their opinions. They just want to get together and get it done. And then it's really a party. We have a convivial atmosphere going right away because nobody's mad at anybody else and there's no real divergence. We just want to get something accomplished. Yeah, we want to do some good. And that's the best part because then we just go and have our snack and go, wow, that was a lovely treat. Bring it back to our seats and keep working. No one, no leader has to come and take anyone aside and say, you know, you shouldn't do that. It's uncivil. That kind of stuff. So sometimes it's very easy, and the timeouts really are just timeouts to have a snack and go to the bathroom. But other times it's a good way to diffuse a situation. So I'm about to say the thing that I always say just before we start talking about the shared food. And it's very important, so I say it each time, all bear with me. I know a lot of you have been here before. Thank you. Thank you for coming back. And I see a lot of you are new also, which is also wonderful. Come back. But I always say this because it's so important. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey. You need to ask people if they have any dietary prohibition, religious prohibition, or allergic problems with any kind of food. And you have to tell everybody so that no one has a bad time. Also, you will ask people when they bring the food to list what's in it. Not just a little tag that says what it is, meatloaf. No, you want to list so that I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat it, if it's against any of my prohibitions. Yeah, very important. So those are the two rules about that. And usually, always, because I have a thing about running short on food, I think it's the leader's job to have a little bit extra in case people think you're kind of small on the potluck concept. And you know, the people that bring the least eat the most. This is an actual law. Yes, an actual rule. I swear to you. But anyway, so I think we should have a little extra. Also, we need to have at least one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, it for sure doesn't violate any of the prohibitions that we took the survey on. Neither does our adventure recipe for this group, by the way. But a safe recipe has not too many ingredients. My people in my area that I'm working, and this is, of course, a global show, so you have to judge about your people, would be familiar with the ingredients. They'd have eaten it before, know that they can. And it's and also the ingredients are something that most people are not allergic to, so that no one gets an ugly surprise. Yeah. So let's start out with our safe recipe. It's going to be vegetable fajitas. Delicious. You want to make this more adventurous? Add protein. Yeah. If you know that your people are fine with it, chicken is lovely. Thoroughly, because we don't want to have any ugly surprises. And besides, it's more delicious that way. There's a little kind of a movement in the United States to kind of undercook things. I don't approve. I gotta tell you. So, we could talk about this with some chicken. I call it vegetable fajitas. If anybody's really a vegetarian or you're think they might be and you're not positive, although they were supposed to tell you, vegetarian is always the most acceptable as a safe recipe, but I like to put chicken in this. Very delicious. You can leave the items separate if you'd like. I don't usually. The people separate out the vegetables. I do not. Okay. So let's call this a chicken veggie fajita. Yeah. Take the chicken out if you want to make it safer. We've got 4 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, lovely, gets a little color and a little salt, 2 teaspoons of oil, which would be 1 tablespoon, wouldn't it? 2 garlic cloves that we're going to mince up. You think I use too much garlic, which people think I do, just use less. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of dried oregano. Shall we put some chicken in it? Yeah, let's put some chicken in it. Let's put in a couple of pounds. 2 pounds of skinless, boneless chicken breasts that we're going to cut into strips. Let's have a nice sweet onion sliced and separated into rings because it looks nice with the veggies. I do prefer sweet onion. I don't know if it's hard to come by in other countries and in other states and like that. We seem to be able to get something called the Vidalia, and it's a nice, big, sweet onion. Try not to get those really bitter ones if you can't find that. It's just because it's not as delicious. Now, let's have 1 each of a green pepper, a red pepper, and a yellow pepper. We're going to, of course, take the what is that called, the stem out, and cut them and de-vein them and de-seed them real carefully, because those seeds are no good. And let's have about a dozen tortillas that we're going to make a little bit warm, and some nice shredded cheddar cheese for over the whole thing. I always figure about a cup and a half of it. You could always add. I mean, if people like a lot of cheese. In my area, the cheese actually comes pre-shredded in a bag, and therefore it's real easy to put your hand in the bag and refill the little condiment bowl that people are getting the cheese out of, because I don't put it in. I put it next to it in a condiment bowl. So we've got our dozen tortillas. This will be kind of nicely stuffed. You want to make it more of an appetizer, you get smaller tortillas. Yeah. So we're going to combine the lemon juice, the soy sauce, the oil, the garlic, the cumin, and the oregano in a small bowl. We're just going to give it a whisk. Then we're going to place our chicken and our veggies in a greased baking pan. And we're going to take about a quarter cup of the mixture that we just made with the lemon juice and the soy sauce and like that. We're going to drizzle it over. And we're going to broil it for about 10 minutes. Because it's fajitas and we don't want to just fry things up. We want it to be crispy. Yeah. So maybe less than 10 minutes. But the chicken needs to be cooked through is the key to this. Yeah. So we're now it's been in there, let's say, 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes. And we're going to take it out. We're going to turn over the chicken and the vegetables because they're cooked on one side, really. Remember, we used half of our mixture. Let's throw the rest on, drizzle it on. Boil it for another 5 minutes. Make sure that your chicken is cooked through. And there you have it. That's your fajita filling. I usually leave that right in the middle, put the big pile of tortillas next to it, because people have their own idea of what they want and how much they want to take. Yeah. So that's it. It's very delicious. And I usually keep the cheese in a little separate bowl to the side if people would like it. Yep. You can make guacamole and all kinds of nice things, the salsa and stuff to go in it also. Good point. I personally like it like salsa on the side. And a lot of people like it stronger than I make things, more spicy. So for those of you who do, there is a jalapeno sauce, essentially speaking, that I put out, and other little condiments that I don't care for in mine, but people do seem to like. Yeah. So that is our safe recipe. It is safe because it doesn't have too many ingredients. Yes, it's more than easy to do, but that's not what makes it safe. And they are ingredients that my people would be familiar with. And I've taken the survey, right, about allergies, food prohibitions, and religious prohibitions to food. So no one will be offended, right? So that's our safe recipe. And yes, it's lots of fun, and yes, of course, you can triple it and double it and like that, depending on how many people you have. I like to put, if I'm going to put in protein, I like to have quite a bit of protein, quite a bit of peppers, right? Yeah. There we go. So now let's get on to our adventure recipe. Now, the thing that makes this adventure is the pork, right? Ham. Because there are a lot of prohibitions against eating pork. Yeah. So, let's do this one. This is our adventure recipe because it's got pork, it's got ham. Let's have about a pound and a half. And we're going to, of pasta. And we're going to cook it al dente and we're going to drain it. I am a real definite that I think that no matter what kind of a pasta dish you make, even though it might be pretty to have long noodles, my advice is don't do it. It's too hard to serve on a potluck. I like things that can go into a spoon, like rotini, like a serving spoon, like rotini or those little bow tie pastas, or even a macaroni type one, or the tubes, right? Anything, well, I like it to look pretty, so I usually use rotini. Quite frankly, it is easy for me to come by. I do not make my own pasta. And it is easy for me to get a box of rotini that is different colors because there's some vegetable in it. Green, orange, and white playing in the same box. It just looks so pretty that I tend to buy that. I don't know if they taste different than each other, and that's really the truth. That's about a pound and a half. We're going to cook it. We're going to set it, drain it, and set it aside. 3 tablespoons of oil. Another sweet onion that we're going to chop up this time. Mm-hmm. I prefer them. They're nice and big, too. 3 garlic cloves minced. 1 tablespoon of butter. We could use that. Give us 2 tablespoons of butter. I like butter. I like to cook with it. Delicious. Let's have about 1/2 pound of smoked ham, which we're going to cut into half into little cubes, half-inch cubes, maybe a little smaller. Mm-hmm. No sense in making the ham. I hate to say this because I don't want you guys to use leftovers and make anyone sick. But after holiday dinners when you've got ham left over, not such a bad idea because the ham's already cooked besides. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're going to cut into little cubes because everything else is little like the peas. Let's have 1 cup of peas. I am personally going to use frozen ones. I confess this immediately. If you're going to shell them and use fresh ones, more power to you. Your pasta with ham and peas will probably come out better than mine. But I'm going to use the frozen peas also. So I'm going to use 1/2 pound of already pre-cooked ham that I'm going to cut into small cubes. And I'm going to have 1 cup of peas. I'm going to have frozen ones. If you're going to do frozen like I am, they need to be thawed, so take them out a little in advance. Mm-hmm. And also pat them dry when you go to use them. Let's have 1/4 teaspoon of salt, just because a little bit of salt is a little bit better. And 1/4 teaspoon of the black pepper that they grind, a little grinder, yeah. So we've got our pasta cooked, right? And it is not the long, skinny kind. It is the individual pieces kind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got that cooked. We've got that all set to the side and drained. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to take our onion and our garlic, and we're going to heat up some of the oil, and we're going to stir them around, cook them, until the onion's translucent and it smells marvelous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the onion, the garlic, it takes about 3 minutes. It doesn't take very long. Now add the butter. It's all around. I usually get impatient and push it with a spoon. Mm-hmm. Add the ham and the peas. Then we're going to cook it. We're going to stir it occasionally until it's heated through. Depending on how warm it's fairly warm, the onion, the garlic occasionally. I don't see that there's any time a problem with that. Mm-hmm. 3 minutes, heat it through, add the butter, add the ham and the peas. Going to all cook it around. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take long, another 3 minutes. There you have it. Really, because our pasta was cooked and our ham was cooked. And therefore, we have basically just to combine the other ingredients and make a sauce. Yay! Delicious. Mm-hmm. A little bit of cheese on top. Wouldn't hurt anything. I'm fond of Parmesan. Mm-hmm. So, that is our adventure recipe. Mm-hmm. You're going to use frozen peas like I am. Make sure they're hot and cooked through. You don't want to turn them to mush, but you don't want to accidentally serve something with a cold middle to it. You ever had that? Sometimes things are unevenly heated. Yeah. Yes, this is an excellent recipe to take with you and reheat someplace else. Not for too long, of course, but Yes, it's very good for that. And it is our adventure recipe because of the ham. Mm-hmm. Because of the pork. Pork is something that quite a few cultures do not eat. Quite a few people do not eat, come to think of it. Yeah. So that's our adventure recipe. Delicious. Take my advice and use pasta that is whole pieces. And I see that our time together is getting short. It is. Thank you so much for being here. Yes. And we made it to the recipes. Yes. It's kind of like, yes, we finally actually made it to give the two recipes. And I know some of you actually look forward to it. And I'm glad. Thank you very much. And yes, thank you. A lot of people are saying that they have the first book, which is Recipe for Peace Now. You look at the website and find it, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. It has more recipes, yes, lots of them. And the second book is really it's fairly newly out. It's really a discussion aid and an exercise aid, yeah. Mm-hmm. So our time together is nearly up. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all of your questions and sending them in. And thank you for coming. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.